You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. I'm Andrew Wiebe. I'm in the green room, as always, doing our things. The holiday is approaching. Dave Goss.
Holidays.
I know, that's what I meant to say, because, you know, you're getting Hanukkah presents and Christmas presents for your girlfriend, because you're just that sort of caring individual.
Yeah. Don't tell her what I'm getting her, because she might not listen to this show.
I would never give you away like that.
And Dave Goss would not listen to this show,
yeah,
so we're
you know
okay
well.
On two levels.
Out in the octagon, Matt, the armchair analyst. Doyle, before we get to what you're getting your cats for Christmas, Hanukkah, any other holiday that you might be celebrating with them, we have breaking news here on the podcast. Huge, huge news. You heard it here first. Ben Baer has turned down the U.S. national team coaching job in the wake of Laurent Blanc's refusal to also take said job. I'm his spokesperson. I argued with him for a while about this. He said he didn't want to go public. It might affect other job opportunities, perhaps different managing, you know, maybe the job at Everton when Big Sam leaves or whatever else happens that we can be speculate about. But, you know, just so you all know, Ben Baer not here today on a plane back, on a Concorde back from
They brought the Concorde out of retirement just for Ben Baer to take one.
So,
do you think that people that do things like this, like let's say the people in quote unquote Laurent Blanc's party, know about like the internet and phones and stuff that you can't just
be
like in America?
Yeah, no.
Someone wants my job. Wants me to take a job.
I think they're just like, this seems to work for everyone else. So like, it's like, you know, you go back to the toolbox. If everything's a nail, you're just like pulling the hammer out every time and you're just banging on it. So
I mean, it worked for Sam Allardyce.
It did.
For sure.
I know it did. We'll
I might start
happens.
Michael Essien into Houston Dynamo rumors again, see if I could get him a couple
bucks. Once again, fake transfer rumors. I'm in for that. I want that. We've got some fake MLS indie band names coming up in the mailbag, of which there are some really, really good ones. By the way, big show coming up in the second segment. John Thorington, the executive VP of soccer ops and general manager for Los Angeles FC. And we're going to talk to Dave Martinez in just a second. He's the former editor of Empire of Soccer. And the news, the real breaking news, I should say, Giovanni Savarese, he is the head coach of the Portland Timbers. Somebody on this show, like 2 weeks ago, we were handicapping who would get that job.
Handicapping.
Yeah, that's what I said. But I'm going quickly here. I predicted this. I said Giovanni Savarese is going to get the job. He gets it.
I like how stunned you sound that one of your predictions was correct.
Hey, look. You just got to let the emotion flow through you. It's a good hire, I think. Third ever MLS head coach for the Timbers. He's 46 years old. He's a former Venezuela international, 30 caps, 10 goals. He played in MLS for 5 seasons, 51 goals. Matt, you probably remember him from the Metro Stars days. He was banging in double digits for 3 straight years for them. 5 years with the New York Cosmos, 3 soccer bowls out of 4 that he appeared in. He was the head coach. He was the sporting director. He guided the club through some really, really trying times. And I'm going to get it started with you, Doyle. Your thoughts here before we get to Dave. We've waited a long time for this because it seems like every job that pops up, he's rumored as a link. Well, he finally has the job. It's just all the way across the country from where his roots are.
I think given his career. He played in New York and Caracas and Italy and Wales and London and back to New York. Like he's not going to have any trouble traveling. He's not going to have any trouble picking up and moving to a new spot and becoming sort of enmeshed in the culture. And if you look at what he did with the Cosmos, he managed MLS guys with that team. You know, guys who've been around the league for a long time, including one who just got signed today, Jimmy Maurer, a backup keeper for Dallas. But he also managed global stars. He managed Raul. He managed Marco Senna. And granted, it was at the end of their run. But this is a guy who has shown the ability to command respect no matter where a player comes from and to sort of knit together a locker room in a way that it's, I mean, any MLS manager will tell you it's tough to have a guy freshly out of college making $50,000 sitting in, you know, a locker right next to a guy who, you know, is plays for the Argentina national team and makes $5 million. You know, like it's just a different kind of ego balancing act. And most coaches coming into this league don't have experience with that. Giovanni Savarese does. And he's been there coach, but as a player, because he was that guy making $15,000 a year when he first signed with the Metro Stars, sitting next to Roberto Donadoni and Todd Ramos. So it makes a lot of sense as a hire. I'm an old Metro Stars stan, so I'm thrilled to see Gio back in the league. And I think Portland fans are going to love him.
I agree with that last one from Doyle 100%, and I think other coach fans are going to like him as well. He's got fire. He's got intensity. He loves the sport. I think he brings another angle, right? A South American born and raised player who played overseas but also played in the early days of MLS. So another wrinkle to what this league has. And we've talked a lot about coaches in the offseason. And just when you look at all the different levels of who's out there, you've got Peter Vermes, you've got Tata Martino, you've got Brad Friedel, guys who are all from different backgrounds that bring a different mentality, a different experience, a different style to the league. Savarese is going to add to that. And he's going to be phenomenal for the rivalry in Cascadia. And I think he's going to be successful. So it's going to be interesting to see how he now scales back from building his team and coaching to now just coaching. And we know that – we don't know, but we speculate that that was part of Caleb Porter's reason for leaving, was he wanted more control. So obviously Savarese is new. You're never going to stick yourself out there early on, but it'll be interesting to see how he works with Gavin Wilkinson.
And he comes into a club that's very established at this point in MLS. I mean – to be honest, Houston was in this rebuilding mode. Who are they? What are they? What are they going to be? It was a little bit up in the air. That was one of the jobs he reportedly interviewed for. Minnesota, they were building from basically scratch at the MLS level, and it was very much in the air what they would do on the personnel side, how all that would work. Of course, they saw him in NASL from the early days. But I like the fact that he comes into a fan base and a club that feels established, and he doesn't have to come in and help shape those things. He can just come in and be himself. And I think from all indications, from all descriptions, from everybody I've talked to, I think both of you guys are right. That they're going to like him because he's an emotional guy. He's a guy that wears his heart on his sleeves. He's a guy that stands up for his players. And you saw in the days when we weren't sure the Cosmos were going to still exist. And by all reports, the guy holding all of that together was Giovanni Savarese. And now he has this opportunity to build a team that finished first in the Western Conference last year. And, yeah, they had some issues with injuries, and there are some – you know, rumors going around with Fernando Adi, though Merritt Paulson says those are bunk. But he walks into a team that has a ton of Spanish speakers that you would think will continue to sign Spanish speakers given his connections, given their past history, given what's worked in this league when it comes to creative attacking players. It feels like a good situation. I put out the call on Twitter, hey, Timbers fans, what do you think? There's some, you know, there's some anxious folks out there. There's some people that are just, you know, hey, I'm not sure yet. I'm wait and see mode. And then there's a lot of people that say it looks like a home run. So we will just have to wait and see. We are going to try to get him on the show as soon as possible. Apparently, everybody within that Timbers organization is out of the country right now. So take that for what you think it might mean. Maybe some scouting going down. I mean, I'm talking everybody. So
selfishly, but I've had the chance to sit and speak with him, and he is an ETR favorite already, and he's never even come on the show.
Oh.
So I'm pretty excited that he's in the league.
Sweet. We were going to get him very soon. In the meantime, Dave Martinez is the former editor-in-chief of Empire of Soccer. He spent many, many an afternoon at training, many a weekend at Cosmos games with Giovanni Savarese. He's on the line now. Dave, what's up, man?
Oh, all good. Thank you guys for having me on.
As always, the reason why you're here, for anybody who hasn't noticed or heard or has been spacing out during the beginning part of this podcast, Giovanni Savarese, the head coach, or former head coach, I should say, of the New York Cosmos, longtime MLS striker, bounced around the world playing soccer very effectively, played for Venezuela, is now the head coach of the Portland Timbers. Dave, you have years of experience covering this man. Tell us how it began. Give us a little bit of background story on Giovanni.
Well, it's interesting with Giovanni, because when he was first hired by the New York Cosmos in 2013, I actually thought it was a bad hire. I mean, they were coming out, if you guys remember at the time, with a lot of pomp and circumstance, big name players, Marco Senna and everything else, these big guys coming out of nowhere, Pele promoting the team. And here they are with this large image and they're bringing on a rookie coach. I quickly realized how wrong I was. I mean, what Giovanni has is, and even as a player, Metro Stars fans will tell you this, and surely being from this area, I witnessed it myself, his competitiveness is just so contagious. He has a way of communicating with people, whether they be the Marco Senna's or Raul's of the world, or college kids just getting picked up from the draft, or even, you know, journeymen throughout the soccer pyramid. He has an ability to communicate on a one-to-one basis and be able to clearly and concisely identify what he's looking for, that he quickly becomes a favorite with players. And that's, I truly believe, that the personality, more so than the tactics, are what have brought him so much success in his early career.
Now, though, he is a coach, so let's talk about the tactics. In terms of just style, in terms of the way he wants his teams to play, what should fans expect?
Well, he's not afraid to change a look during a match. So be very clear of that. And when he first started coaching, he was deferential, I suppose, would be the word, to the 4-2-3-1. He would usually base his attack off of that. But over the years, that has changed. He's gone 4-1-4-1. I think that the lone striker throughout the years is just an effect of not having strikers at his disposal that would be able to carry out his attack. But I think what he tries to do is create solid communication in the back line, establish a good block in the middle to sustain the defense and the goalkeeping, and he wants to give freedom to his 4 to 5 attackers up front. I think that's what he's all about. You'll see a lot of change in looks. You'll see a lot of switches in game. He'll keep you guessing, and he is able to motivate his players and keep everybody on board with the tactics, and I find that to be very impressive.
You mentioned his playing career, one of the best players in Metro Stars history. He was a talented, skillful forward, but also physical and aggressive. Do you see that come through with his teams?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as I said before, that competitiveness is incredibly contagious with him, and he'll actually go into training. It's not very rare. As a matter of fact, it's probably more regular than rare to see him in his shorts going right in there in training and participating himself and demonstrating how it is that he wants people to either defend or attack. That's just his nature. You know, I think that's something that helps him relate to the players as well. Considering his experiences in MLS 1.0, you know, wasn't easy back in those days. He lived through those times. He's seen players go through the system today. He has a great recognition, a great understanding, and with that understanding comes an ability to relate. And that's what he does best. That's why I keep on going back to that. It's the personality of Gio that kind of creates a cult of personality wherever he goes, whether he was Metro Stars, Cosmos, he just has that effect. And I think Timbers fans are going to find that very quickly.
Speak Spanish as well, fluent Venezuelan, 30 caps, 10 goals with Alvino Tinto. This is something that's important for, I think, this iteration of the Timbers. And I talked to Diego Valeri about this when he was in the office doing MLS Cup Central and this, that, and the other. He said, you know, we kind of need to bridge that gap in our locker room. And obviously that was not something that Caleb Porter was completely comfortable with. Apply Giovanni to the Timbers, Dave, and also help me understand why this is the first MLS job he's actually getting, because his name had been on the tips of our tongues for just about every opening over the last couple of years. You're talking Houston, Minnesota. Every time something came open, his name popped up.
His name did pop up, and he was a finalist for the Houston job not too long ago. What wound up happening is during a time of turmoil, there was a transfer fee associated with just being able to talk to the men. And that drove people off. I know that some people may dispute it, but my sources have always held him contended that he had a transfer fee attached to his name. And in the world of North American professional soccer, it's just to pay a transfer fee for a coach is something that's unfeasible to begin with, particularly somebody who's made his bones in the lower leagues. So I think that there have been many teams that have approached Giovanni that have wanted him to come on board. Minnesota is absolutely one of them. But that transfer fee tends to turn people off. What was the second part of your question?
Just what are the Timbers going to get out of him? Like, why is this a good match in your mind from afar?
Well, take a look at the experience and the coach that you have coming in. As you said, you're looking for somebody generational. You're looking for somebody that will be able to coach just about anyone. And though he comes from the lower leagues, you're talking about a manager who has managed MLS veterans like Carlos Mendez, Hunter Freeman. He knows his way with the MLS veterans. He's coached world-class players in Raul and Marco Senna. Now, it doesn't matter if you're in the lower leagues or not. Anywhere where you have personalities of that type, as a coach, you risk challenges to your leadership. You risk questions as to your credentials. Giovanni Favorisi managed to, not only with them, but Juan Arango as well, to earn their respect and have them working the way he saw fit. And that's an impressive thing to do, all while creating and fostering this family environment. He's incredibly big on the word family. You're going to hear a lot of that early on. And he wants everybody to feel involved. He's not afraid to make a change. He's not afraid of a personality. If he feels like you have to get off the field, he will take you off the field and find somebody else who understands the role because he's communicated it as such. I think that's what Portland is. I think that's what is the enticing thing to Portland, is that Gio doesn't shy away from the big stars, and he knows how to communicate with the youngest players in the field.
Three Soccer Bowl championships as well. That'll be something that they like to hear. In the Rose City, their one MLS Cup in 2015. This year, a one seed didn't work out in the playoffs. Injuries hurt them. A team with some talent, a team like every other team in the Western Conference, has got to figure some things out this offseason. Dave, before we let you go, remember you can follow him at @DaveMartinezNY on Twitter. When you've spoken to Giovanni in the past, when you've spoken to people around him, when he thought, when he approached, when he interviewed for these jobs, what did MLS represent to him? What did this opportunity represent to him? What do you think it means?
Well, of course, it's a new challenge. You're talking about a coach that in 4 out of 5 years was in the Soccer Bowl, you know, in his division. At that point, you've conquered what you've conquered. I think this is going to be a new challenge for him. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch from afar and see how Gio handles just being a head coach. Because, mind you, while he was doing his work prior to, he has an impressive list of global contacts that I'm sure Gavin Wilkinson will like to take a look at. He helps out on all levels, and there's no ego about him. So I'm interested in seeing the transition for him, because Major League Soccer has long been a point of ambition for him, somewhere where he wants to make his bones. He's proven himself as a coach in the lower leagues. Major League Soccer is that obvious next step, and I know that Savarese is incredibly excited about it.
It's a done deal. Giovanni Savarese, the third ever MLS head coach for the Portland Timbers. He will join. We'll try to get him on this show very, very soon. Dave, thank you so much for lending your expertise, man.
No, thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Big thanks to Dave for joining us. Remember, Giovanni Savarese started in the Red Bulls Academy. He started that Cosmos Academy. That's how he jumped off to the first team back in 2013. So if you're a Timbers fan that's been wondering, where are the homegrown signings? Where's the development? Maybe this is an opportunity to see some real young players get an opportunity. Any thoughts? 401-206-0MLS. We'll talk LAFC and rumors in the second segment, and there are always a ton. That Ezequiel Barco stuff just drags on and on and on. There's a lot of different sides to that right now. But before we get to that, before the break here, CONCACAF Champions League. We got the fever. We got the draw on Monday night. If you're listening to this before that, which is, it's a slim chance here, 7 p.m. Eastern, Univision Deportes Network. Yeah, 5 MLS teams in this thing. FC Dallas, Red Bulls, Seattle Sounders, and Toronto FC are all in pot one. In pot two are just the Colorado Rapids. A team from pot one and pot two will be matched up together in this round of 16 here. You cannot go up against someone from your home country, but Toronto FC could be drawn against the Colorado Rapids. Meanwhile, the Rapids, other than TFC, could play either Club America, Chivas Guadalajara, Tigres, or Club Tijuana. All Liga MX squads, all salty, all very good, all the teams that MLS clubs want to knock off, ultimately. Dave, when you're watching tonight, what are you looking for here? Because on the other side, Dallas, Red Bulls, Sounders, Toronto FC as well, you're looking at teams from the Dominican Republic, Herediano from Costa Rica, from Honduras, from El Salvador. Saprissa's here, obviously. Taro's here from Panama.
Not from Guatemala. That's the only thing you have to know. No teams from Guatemala. Saprissa, but mainly Herediano are the ones you want to avoid. They're probably the biggest teams that you have to deal with. Herediano had a good season coming off this, so I think if you're
Didn't
an
MLS... they got in because of some weirdness with Guatemala?
Yeah,
or?
Because the Guatemalan teams are no longer, are currently not allowed to play in CONCACAF competition.
Explain.
They had government interference in sports, and FIFA really doesn't like when stuff like that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So there was rumors of Spain being kicked out of the World Cup last week because of something
like that.
So Herediano goes in on that one. So those are the teams you want to avoid if you're in that first spot, especially if you're an MLS team, to go down a big team in a big stadium, Taro FC as well. But I think if you're TFC, you want the Colorado Rapids. You want the known entity rather than having to go down to Central America, figure out the travel, figure out your matchup, figure out what you're looking at. Play a team you already know you can beat if you're the Toronto.
Ouch. Rapids Rabbis at home just like,
For sure. Slicha, my bad, but it's the best you can do. And then on the flip side, you look at the Mexican teams, and Chivas had a horrible season after winning the title. Tigres won the whole thing. So Chivas is the one Mexican team you want. They play in a modern, up-to-date stadium. They play with a lot of fans, in front of a lot of fans who, how do I put it? They're Yankee fans. They don't really show up if they don't team
Mets fan. If they don't, his true colors.
If they don't think the team's that good, so that's how I see the breakdown right now.
Doyle, who has the best opportunity among these MLS teams? I mean, every year we have these exact same conversations. It's like Groundhog Day.
Yeah, but this one's the easiest one.
And who has an opportunity here? Who has a chance? I know we're in the middle of this transfer window, and these teams, all five of them, are going to look different. Maybe not Toronto FC, although I expect that they'll add some new pieces, maybe not transformational pieces. Who are you looking at?
Toronto FC. I think it's pretty clear that this is the best team in MLS history, and they're the deepest team, which you need for this type of thing. And they have a lot of guys who have played in Central America before, who have played in Mexico before in games that matter. And so that combined with, I think, just their whole approach to every single game, whether it was Canadian Championship or, you know, regular season trip to New England or, you know, the MLS Cup itself, they just were able to constantly hit that note. And I think that is what their fans will expect. And it's what the players and staff will expect of them in these games. So I think it's TFC. You can make an argument for Seattle as well. But I think Dallas, the Red Bulls, and definitely Colorado, a cut below that.
Now, if you're Red Bulls or FC Dallas, you want to show your fan base and yourselves that last year was an anomaly and that you're for real a contender for MLS Cup, this is a great early way to do it and show that you're a team that can play at the highest level. And if you're Jozy Altidore or Michael Bradley, yeah, you failed in World Cup qualifying, but being the first MLS team to win CCL would be a little bit of a feather in the cap.
By the way, we had Jozy Altidore in the studio the other day, and we're just kind of talking to him about different things and broke down his MLS Cup goals. Go check those out at MLSsoccer.com. But a bunch of it, the conversation I was having with him was about CCL, because they have really kind of been explicit about that desire to make history there. By the way, they just changed their preseason plans. They're doing what Montreal did. They're going to start in L.A., but instead of going to Orlando like they had planned, they're going to Mexico. And they're going to play a bunch of games down there in preparation. These games, by the way, will go down between February 20th and March 1st. So it could be really cold in Toronto, and that could be a home field advantage. Bill Manning says they will play at BMO. There's no way they're going to move that stuff inside to the dome.
They were all very proud of that when I asked when I was up there. I was like, where do you think you'd play? They're like, we're playing at BMO, and it will be sold out, and it will be cold.
Yeah.
They seem pretty excited about that.
Sounds like it. Anyway, Josie's like, look, when I was overseas, I actually probably watched CCL matchups with MLS teams more than I watched league games, which I don't know if he's just out here talking or if that's for real, but you know, he really made a point to talk about knocking Liga MX off the perch, what it would mean, what this competition means to a global kind of perception of the league and of Toronto FC ultimately, and that's how I think they want to, in addition to the league, obviously. But I think Toronto FC's ambitions are very large, and we know that based on the outlay and the new stadium stuff and the best team of all time and everything else. They want to get to the Club World Cup. This is their route to do it. And if you're the best team in MLS history, you got to show up in the CCL. If you're the best team in MLS history and you don't show up in this competition, you don't take it seriously, you bow out early, you do so in an embarrassing fashion, which we've seen many an MLS team do back in the day, that reflects on you. And that will be part of this team's legacy as well. It may not be remembered by, you know, kind of the mainstream folks, but for the rest of us who are doing the accounting when it comes to MLS year over year over year, the hardcore people that love this league and follow it like crazy people really is what we are, we'll remember that. So big opportunities here. That draw going
and
down.
And I just want to
– Yeah, go ahead.
I do want to jump in there and make that point. If you ask old-timers like myself what's the best team from the first decade of MLS, they'll almost all say the 1998 DC United team. And that team didn't win the Supporters Shield. They didn't win MLS Cup. They didn't win the Open Cup. What they did was win the Champions Cup, which was the precursor to the CCL. And then they went the Copa Interamericana, which was a competition against Vasco da Gama, who had won Copa Libertadores. And so we remember that 1998 team even more fondly than we remember the 97 team, which won the Shield MLS Cup double, or the 96 team, which won the Open Cup MLS Cup double, because of what they did on the international stage. And I think there are a number of guys in that Toronto locker room who were around then, and who know the stories. And I think that they will be very aware of that. And I will be disappointed. I will be sorely disappointed if they don't come out all guns blazing.
Last little piece to add to you saying that they want to be bigger than the league is they are the biggest team right now in Canada. Montreal and Vancouver both strong in their base, but countrywide. And the Blue Jays are the Canadian team, the only sports team that exists that everyone in Canada roots for because of their success. And I think TFC represents Canadian soccer right now. And so if they do something like this, it takes it from they're the first MLS team to win MLS Cup to they represent us on the world stage.
Vancouver Whitecaps fans, yeah. Impact fans,
feel free.
Hit us up. Holler at Dave, 401-206-0-MLS. We're going to go to break. On the other side, LAFC and all the rumors fit to talk about.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental, hanging out in the green room, and we are talking rumors, we're talking signings, but first we are talking Los Angeles Football Club, LAFC, their inaugural season coming in 2018. Joining us right now, the general manager of this brand new club. They're building, spending, John Thorington. John, how's it going?
Very well, thanks. How are you guys?
We're doing good. I told you this before you came on, but it bears repeating. We're watching you build this roster with glee, and it's not just because of the signings so far. I think it's also anticipation of what's to come. How do you feel right now with Latif, with Laurent Simon, with Omar Gaber, with Diego Rossi, with Tyler Miller?
Are you really not going to name Diego Rossi and Carlos Vela?
Yeah, Marco, you know, Walker Zimmerman.
Yeah. Diego Rossi. Yeah, no, look, I'm incredibly excited about where we are. My glee, as you put it, will hopefully be coming once we start achieving things on the field. Not a process in which you ever feel comfortable until everything is done. And even then, we're going to be constantly looking to improve wherever we can. However, having said that, I do feel comfortable that we've made with the decisions we've made and some of the acquisitions we've been able to pull off with in the international market with trades, with the expansion draft, and then now, you know, upcoming with free agents and more to come.
So we've been watching you, I don't know, work behind the scenes for a long time now. I think back to the combine when we sat down with you as well. What was the preparation process like? You know, as you started to get into this moment when you're actually making signings, things are happening, players are being added to the page. I mean, that's the payoff of how much work, how much ground was laid here.
Yeah, it was interesting. Everybody talks about the 48 hours when you get the list of the expansion draft. And for sure, some names caught us off guard. But I said the work to that started 2 years ago. And when we watch every MLS game, we have eyes on it. We talk about it. We predict. And I would say we were probably 85% level of certainty in terms of what would be left exposed in the expansion draft with a couple guys, as I say, that we were surprised to see. But you know, the work that went into that, just as an example, was very much long-term so that the 48 hours were manageable. A lot of the work is done before you ever get the names because you certainly, the timing of the draft and when we see the list does not afford us the luxury of going and digging into each option. So that's just one example of all the work, let alone the amount of research and travel data and scouting that goes into signing a guy like Carlos, signing a guy like Diego, signing a guy like Walker, Simon, all of these guys. We do all of our work so that we can be as comfortable as we can with these decisions.
We talked to you at Combine, as Weeby mentioned. You didn't have a coach at the time. You were not on your own, but he is a huge part now, Bob Bradley, of what you do, of all of these scouting, signings. What's it been like since he's come, and what's it like working with him?
Yeah, fantastic. I think our timeline for this year, and that was part of the timeline when I would have sat down with you guys in January, was we wanted to make sure we had our coach in the summer. and not just any coach, but the coach we wanted. We managed to do that. And then from then, it's just been a really fruitful process of him syncing up with all the work that we had done prior to him joining, and then us syncing up with him, furthering our knowledge of what he likes, what he wants. And it's been a really good fit to date, and we hope that that will prove the case in the years to come.
We'll get Bob here on the show, I'm sure, soon. We'll get his words out of it. But when you guys look at the project, look at the team you're building, what was kind of his selling point? What was his dream that he came to you with? What's the mutual dream here? If you had to describe what you'd like to see when that day in March comes and you guys walk out onto the field, what kind of team, what kind of identity, where are you headed towards?
Yeah, I think for Bob, and he will say it probably in slightly differently, but I think, look, American soccer fans all know Bob and know the success he's had here, the success he's had abroad, the success he's had with national teams. And I don't think he is interested in anything other than a big vision, a big dream, and a really ambitious project. And I think that's where we came in and we said, look, Bob, come get to know this. Come sit with our owners. Look at this stadium project. Look at the plan to be a global club, not just another MLS club, but a global club. And certainly we have a lot of steps yet to take on that path, but I think the scale and ambition of our owners and this club is fit with what Bob wanted to do next. I mean, he's the first and only guy ever to coach in the Premier League. He's coached in World Cups. He's coached foreign national teams. He's done so much that, you know, it took a big project to excite him, but I can assure you he's incredibly excited and, you know, hit the ground running and jumped in from the minute we signed him and announced him to now. I mean, he's traveled high, far and wide, is a critical part of all of our discussions and decisions.
So we'll get to some of those expansion draft picks in a little bit. We'll talk Vela. We'll talk Diego Rossi. Those excite me. Omar Gobert is a name that most Americans won't have known. How many Egyptians are going to be on this team, man? I feel like Bob has a network that's pretty incredible.
Say 100.
Yeah, like, are we getting the whole Egyptian national team together? I mean, that's a hopeful
thing. I'd say that extreme is unlikely at this point. No, look, one of the things you get with a coach, no matter who you hire, is their network, and not just their network, but hopefully players that want to come play for him. And certainly Bob gets us that, and with Omar Gobert, the case is that, yes, he's an Egyptian guy because Bob, you know, was the coach of their national team. But that's replace Egypt with guys that played for him in the UK, with guys that have played for him in the national team, all sorts of guys. Bob's been around a long time and has a great reputation with his players and clubs and national teams. So certainly that was not lost on us that having a coach of Bob's caliber is a big recruiting chip.
This year, coming into the season, you have a lot of assets to build this team, and now every team gets a whole bunch of TAM money on top of that. You look at what Atlanta did last year. What is the expectation for you, for the ownership group, for Bob, of how this team's supposed to be put together and how this team's supposed to compete this year in its first season?
Yeah, I think the critical word there is compete. We want to be competitive from day one, and where that takes us come October, November, hopefully December, time will tell. We are not naive to the fact that there will be uncontrollable turbulence when you come in as an expansion team. And, you know, we want to set out to mitigate that, what I call turbulence, as best we can. Look, Atlanta did a fantastic job. I think everybody gives them their very earned credit for what they've done. There are aspects of what Atlanta did that affirm our plan. There are other aspects, you know, we've come out and we've said from day one, we're not copying anybody, but certainly there are learnings to be had from any of these recent expansions and existing MLS teams. So we are open ears, open eyes as to what has come before us and to see how that may help shape and inform what we do. But we are unique. We're different. And we have a plan that we think will help get us to that point where we're competing from day one.
So Diego Rossi is one of these names that kind of to me, is a little reminiscent of what Atlanta did, in that he's a young South American with a lot of upside, an attacking player, a dynamic attacking player. This is a guy from Peñarol, one of the biggest clubs in South America, had broken into the first team, had gotten double-digit goals. I mean, I think he had like 7 goals, 8 assists or something like that, but 10 all competitions. Mm-hmm. What's the scouting report on this guy? Because most of the folks listening to our show, heck, ourselves included, you know, we've heard the, you know, we've watched the techno highlight reel, but I'm sure it is not the depth that you have. Take us behind the scenes a little bit. Who is he?
Yeah, so for us, a lot of credit has to go. We have a scout on the ground who worked for LAFC, who's in Montevideo, who has known Diego since he was a 13-year-old kid. He has been, you know, the pride of Peñarol at each age group as he has advanced through. And just to think, I mean, if you ever get the chance to go to a big Peñarol game and you see the passion and the pressure, and to think there's a 19-year-old kid leading the line for them, it's really, really speaks volumes about who he is, not just as a player to earn that right, but also his character, that he is unfazed by this pressure. So we saw all of that combined to be a really appealing profile for us as we look to, yeah, sign these kids that we think, these players, I shouldn't call them kids, these players who we think will grow with us. And it's a new narrative for MLS. And I think for sure, a lot of credit has to go to Atlanta with what they did very famously with a few of their higher profile, not, I wouldn't say higher profile, but a few of their signings who are now high profile players in the league. And that was always a part of our plan. We put out a scouting network around South America and in certain areas where we thought we could get good value. And this narrative for MLS, as I say, is, you know, this Diego has options to go to Europe and he's choosing to come here. And I think the more and more we can do that, it will only help the growth of this league.
So one of the things about these young guys, and we saw it with Atlanta, John, and you know, we're seeing it now, well, with interest in where those guys might go next, is that transfer fees are being paid that I don't think anybody was accustomed to or maybe even expecting, even at this juncture of the league in Atlanta and some other teams. And now I assume yourself with Diego Rossi have changed the game a little bit. How do you as a club, as an ownership group, as an executive in your case, approach transfer fees? And in many cases, I assume here with the talent that you've gotten in Diego Rossi, 7-figure transfer fees.
Yeah, well, I just think it depends on the, each respective club's financial model. I think the way you look at whatever dollar you put into a player, it's an investment. It might be an investment in what you're getting out of that player from day one, like we're doing with Carlos Vela. It, you know, the flip side, you might be getting a younger player with upside, and you see both. You see a player with upside with great future value, whether that is for you or if it's the right opportunity for the player in the club that he moves on to go elsewhere. But yeah, I do think it's indicative of the growth of our league. And that certainly has implications on the field, but I also think it's indicative of our fan base, that now we have fans that are educated, that are just clamoring for the best quality on the field they possibly can. And the research we've done with our fan base is that young and exciting is certainly something that really draws these fans. And I think whereas the model understandably in the past, and look, we have a really famous player in Carlos Vela too, so I don't think these are mutually exclusive concepts, but there are two ways in which you can invest. You can invest in a player, you know, who has had a great career and will continue a great career, or you can invest in a player, you know, at the relatively infant stage of his career and watch him grow with the club.
You mentioned the scouting network that you have down in South America, and we talked about Bob and his connections, but Juan Pablo Angel, you made an announcement coming on as a scout who's going to be in Colombia. When you look around the globe and you think about how you're going to put this team together and players that can come in at younger ages, where are you targeting, finding players, and how are you going about convincing them that LAFC is the project?
Yeah, I would say we're doing our best to leave no stone unturned. So we... obviously, Carlos is coming from a top league in Europe. We have, you know, a player like Diego is coming from Uruguay. I would expect that we will have more players from South America. We'll have more players from Europe. What Kansas City did to identify Latif, which, you know, obviously now will be a part of us in Africa, is also, you know, a market that we see with great value. So we're looking in Asia as well. So I when I mean it's a global scouting network, we are, as I say, doing our best to leave no stone unturned And that's a part of us as a club. We talk about uniting this great city, this world city, through the world's game. And part of that should be informing our decisions of having a very diverse group of players on the field.
We'll get to the academy in just 1 second. I want to get back to the expansion draft. You have what seems to be a top-level MLS center back pairing already. That was quick. Walker Zimmerman, one of the most exciting young center backs in this league, a guy that you sent considerable allocation money to FC Dallas for, as well as that number one spot in the allocation order. Then Laurent Simon, who came in as well via trade from some assets that you picked up in the expansion draft. Is this? I have to imagine you feel this is your starting group, or could we see another player come in that would compete with those two for that starting position?
I would love to think we'd have another center back that is as good as one of those two guys. But yeah, certainly as a starting point, we feel like they are a great foundation for us. Walker was a top priority for us. We, you know, see a great future for him here at LAFC. And then when we looked at the types of players who would complement him, the name around the league that rose to the surface was Simon. So we were able to, you know, we looked at the expansion draft as how can we make our team better. And certainly we feel that with that pair in place from day one, it gives us a great pair. They're different, but we feel like they will combine really well. And then obviously the other pieces that we acquired with Tyler, we think has got a great future as a goalkeeper in this league. You look at Latif Blessing, who we mentioned, young, exciting, really dynamic threat in one of the attacking positions. And then you look at Marco Ureña, which I don't need to explain what he can do to U.S. soccer fans. So we were really excited with those assets.
So before we get into Latif, which, by the way, I thought was – I was shocked that Sporting Kansas City would leave him exposed based on the green card, based on the amount of money he was on, based on his productivity at such a young age. I want to go back to Walker. He's got 1 year left on his deal. Where does that stand with you guys? Are you negotiating that on Juan Simon's side? He had a little bit of I don't know, he blew off some steam on social media, and we've documented his story many times with his daughter and everything, that all the resources they got in Quebec with her. Did you guys have a conversation with him before that move was made? Do you have resources in place to help him and his family? And then Walker, are those negotiations already beginning?
Yeah, I mean, the discussions that we are having with players and the chronology of them, I won't get into specifics about those, but for Walker, for Laurent, for any of our players, I think it is very clear from the first conversation that we at LAFC pride ourselves in how well we take care of our players. And certainly finances are a part of that. But in terms of other things we can do to make them feel at home, to make LA their home, and so that they can perform on the field and focus on what they need to focus on, we have an amazing ownership group that is more than willing to step up to meet those needs. Not just financially, but from a place that they really care about their players.
You look at this team, you've got two star strikers, you have two center backs that we already talked about, still pieces to fill in along that core, but is this all being put together with an already idea of the way and the formation that you guys want to play with?
Yeah, I think Bob does appreciate flexibility, so I think style trumps system for both of us. But certainly, yes, we think we know what type of team we want to be. We've always said we want to represent our city and make our fans proud. And that goes in. That's our soccer making. That's our filter for our decisions. And we feel like we have stayed disciplined to that with each of these, you know, well thought out and deliberate decisions and signings we've made.
For fans out there who have been excited already, give them dates or big moments to look forward to. What's coming next?
Yeah, well, we obviously are incredibly active in concurrent decisions, whether they be with free agents in the short term. We're hoping to add some pieces through free agency. We are in talks around the league with a couple of targets that we can acquire via trade. And then our international talks, we still have a big third DP spot out there, the infusion of new targeted allocation money, as well as our expansion allocation. We feel like we have the resources, but you guys have been around the league long enough. It's not just about spending money, but spending it wisely. So, you know, for our fans, I mean, we had an event on Saturday for our fans, and we had over 3,000 people show up.
Yeah,
and
it looked crazy. Just, how does that happen?
You'll have to. I'm not the right guy to ask. All I can say is just a tremendous. It starts from the top with our owners and their vision. It goes down our brand and community group. Just the way in which this club from the outside is connected with the city. You see it in something like that where, you know, and they didn't know Walker was going to be there. They didn't know Bob was going to be there. And 3,000 people in LA on a beautiful day show up at our stadium to show their support for LAFC. And it was, it's just eye opening. And it's a privilege to be a part of.
John, before I let you go, one last question. You've seen first year expansion teams before firsthand. Vancouver Whitecaps, if I'm not mistaken. What did you learn from the inside of that experience that you're applying now? Whether it be from team construction or whatever.
Obviously, it was a very different seat. I did say I empathize with everybody in that expansion draft because as crazy as – well, I shouldn't say it is harder or not, but being a player in that expansion draft process is a fairly stressful one. But, no, look, I have a great amount of respect for the Whitecaps from ownership all the way down through their front office, their back office, their coaching staff, et cetera. So – this is by no means, I would not insult them in any way, but certainly, you know, when you take what we are doing, yes, that experience will inform and the good and the bad. You know, I think with Vancouver, they now have a top class training facility. We didn't have that day one, which posed challenges. That's no excuse, but it does pose challenges. And I think you have seen when expansion teams come in day one without that home. And stadiums are one thing, but they're, you know, the everyday training facility is a critical piece. And so I literally just got back from our training facility and did a tour of it, which will be opening for the season. And it is just amazing to think of the commitment owners are making to make sure that our players feel at home from day one, not 6 months in, not a year in, not 2 years in, but from the outset saying, you know, really not just talking about this being a great vision, but actually showing it.
An incredible club coming into Major League Soccer. Everyone that comes in these days seems to be LAFC. John Thorington is the general manager. More to watch this offseason. John, good luck. I'm sure we'll be seeing in the news, man.
Thank you, gents.
All right, LAFC doing their thing, man. They say they're not copying Atlanta. They got their own flavor. I'm sure we're going to see that. It's all going to happen come March 2018. The black and gold taking over L.A., or at least trying to push their way in with the Galaxy. Let us know what you think. 401-2060-MLS. More from around the league here. Rumors in a little bit, but first some actual signings. Mike Grella taken in reentry by the Rapids, then shipped to Crew SC for a second rounder. Grelladinho, will we see him recapture form? This is just a depth signing, Doyle? What's the logic behind this one?
I think it's a depth signing. I think he fits pretty nicely as a backup to guys like Justin Miram and Pedro Santos. And I suspect it means that they're fielding offers for the rights to Kakuta Mane, what they should do. If they're not, you know, Mane still has a ton of upside and a ton of value in this league. And if they're not going to start him, which they won't, then it's probably smarter to shop him and see what you can get. Yeah. So I think it presages some bigger moves to come.
We'll see on Kakuta Mane. Christian Dyer reporting that he's likely to come back to MLS. Christian Dyer, by the way, is all over the place. We'll get to him in the rumors section.
Where would you like to see him?
Kakuta Mane?
Yeah. Where would That's be a team question. That you think he'd be successful?
Are we talking about Sporting. As a starter? Yeah, Sporting is a good one. I don't hate that.
You think that Peter Vermees and him would mix?
That's a question. I mean, but they need somebody on that left side. It feels like they're, unless Gerso can really switch over, everybody they got seems to be predominantly on the right side, or at least is most effective there. He would bring something that I don't think that they have. And the other question is, where does it all fit in when it comes to, you know, the guys up top? Because I don't think Kakuta's going to be a guy that you can't spend TAM on him as it pertains to the way those rules are set up. So he's in this weird place as far as a salary number. Where, like, you can't pay him what he might want if you don't think he's going to be a productive starter for you. And Kakuta Mane has not been, I don't think, productivity so far has not been his hallmark. Exciting moments have been. Almosts have been. Every once in a while, golazos have been. Or, like, wow, you just shredded them, but it won't happen for 10 games. I don't know. He's in this weird tweener spot right now. He's such an exciting player. He's got to find somewhere where he can latch on and be in that starting lineup. We'll see. We'll see for Kakuta Mane. Tyrone Mears, the other guy taken in reentry by Minnesota United. A right back, it's not sexy. We know that. There's a lot of moves that aren't very sexy going down right now. The Rapids traded for Jack McBean, so taking a flyer on the LA Galaxy homegrown. Brian Rowe moved from LA to the Vancouver Whitecaps for a second rounder. Chris Seitz signed with the Dynamo. And you like this move, Dave?
I actually do.
I know.
Oh, because we were going through this list, and I was
basically calling it the dog days of MLS signings.
This is a brutal list of things that happened in MLS that in June won't really matter. But Chris Seitz, a legitimate starting goalie in Major League Soccer, and obviously the Dynamo have some question marks at that position right now. So I actually do. On this list that you put together,
the other ones on here, Teal Bunbury, Andrew Farrell, Brad Knighton, and Brian Wright re-signed with New England. Minor Figueroa back for another year with FC Dallas.
Yeah, this is the only one I cared about.
Okay, gotcha.
So, and Darlington Nagbe to Atlanta because he got picked
PJ.
Up. Yeah,
what? And all of MLS Twitter is just aflame with this story.
Did you make that up? What? Calling a private jet?
I didn't, but now I'm saying it because everybody else seems to be saying it.
I didn't see that
I did not make it up. I've never ridden on a private jet. I don't know the lingo as it pertains to private jets. I didn't know that, you know, it would be cool just to go first letter, and that's the acronym.
Yeah.
But they're changing the game, Doyle. Like, I haven't seen this before. I don't expect to see this anytime soon.
Do we have to give credit to Kalen Carr for the PJ thing? Because I think it was him who initiated it.
Yeah, he said it. But, Amobi Okugo was saying it, like, on his Instagram
stories.
Sounds
like two guys who have been on a lot of private jets, then.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know. It was pretty sweet. They're going to
It is pretty sweet, and it, like, this is just Atlanta coming in and just repeatedly upping the game. I would like to be picked up by a private jet. Maybe you can talk to Greg and Sags and see if that could happen for me, Andrew.
No, I think you're gonna have to find your own representation.
Do we call Atlanta United Gulfstream FC now? No one liked that. That one's not gonna catch on. I'll see myself out.
That one did not land. Did not land.
It's been nice.
By the way,
you.
I got some more scouting on Johan Croizet, which is the Frenchman who's been in Belgium who signed that DP contract to Sporting. His salary and mid six figs, so like in the 500 grand zone. They think he's very north-south, which they like. He could play right wing and come into the 10, so maybe like could push Benny out if Benny's not effective, or could play right wing. That's where I was referencing with Gerso. I'm not sure he's maybe the guy that you would want on the left wing, but we could see. Also, Tim Melia told me that Gerso had two dislocated shoulders like at the same time for much of 2017. So at times, you know, we were like, man, this guy is just inconsistent. And he's playing with two dislocated shoulders. So
what does that even mean?
I mean, he's dislocated within like a week and a half of each other, according to Tim. So, I don't know. We'll see for Sporting Kansas City. Rumors out there. Ezequiel Barco is the one that's basically taken over the MLS news sphere here. Right now, reports are that the move and how soon it will happen are, quote, exaggerated. There's also reports that he's asked for the move to Atlanta. There's also reports that Independiente won't take less than $20 million. And there are reports that European teams are now in for him. So, you know, throw a bunch of articles in Google Translate and see what comes out, and you've got a lot of different opinions. If it happens, it's going to be cool. If it doesn't, it's just another one of those rumors that blows up for a week and a half and then goes away. Iker Casillas to Chicago Fire, so let's see. Iker, my bad.
Iker.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I realized as soon as I said it. So it's just December in MLS.
Yeah. Well,
anytime Iker Casillas rumors are basically every open window there is one.
I just think
Iker Casillas used to play David Villa, right?
I just think if you're an MLS executive, you have to watch the movie Goal 2, Santiago Muniz's story, The Dream Continues, and try and sign every player who appears in that movie. So Iker Casillas is on that list.
Expansion teams now have a blueprint
I think
by which to operate.
I'm pretty sure Carlos Bocanegra operated that way.
Okay, gotcha.
And I think LAFC – we forgot to ask LAFC that.
We did. So being that it's December and Bastian Schweinsteiger had a one-year deal, Bild is now reporting that he has Bundesliga interest.
Yeah.
You know, because he needs some negotiation leverage here. He says he's done in Europe, but there's interest. So give him what he wants.
The
second highest salary.
I'm hearing he'll be back in Chicago next year.
Yeah, that's what I expect, just maybe for the amount of money he wants.
The German national team English Twitter account tweeted at him for his birthday and said, maybe we'll see you at the World Cup with Chicago Fire.
They've really been harping on that joke. Good for them. Jeff Carl originally reported this, but the deal is done. David Bingham to L.A. San Jose are going to get 100 in TAM, 100 in GAM, and maybe 50K later on, depending on the perks. Doyle, is this a good move for the Galaxy and Bingham?
I think he's a starting caliber keeper. He's a guy who's a clear upgrade over what they had the last couple of years. And when he's really locked in and playing well, he's a guy who's on the fringes of the national team. But that's a lot of allocation money. That is a lot of allocation money. It's more than, I mean, it's more than the Red Bulls got for Dax McCarty.
200?
So it seems.
Well, hold on. 200? That's not more
they
than
got
like,
two.
Yeah, 100 to 100.
I thought it was 200 of GAM and.
No, I think it's 100 and 100.
All right. Well, so in that case, that's a pretty good trade. that feels appropriate then.
Oh, man. Offseason ETR is the best. It is the most fun. Jeff,
I will take the L on that one.
Yeah, you know
sure.
What? You and Iker Casillas can go commiserate somewhere. Jeff Reuter says the Galaxy are pushing to acquire Miguel Ibarra. Also interest from Seattle and Portland. Dave?
He can be a fullback in MLS. I don't know that he's a game-breaking winger.
Good Lord.
Well,
that is a bucket of ice water.
No, but he could be a wingback. He can run. He has energy. And he's a straight line player.
Yeah,
so he's very north south. But right. I think you're underselling the cleverness of his off the ball movement and final touch in the box, or in the final.
But
third.
You can bring that as a wing back, or you can be like Jovan Jones, who is a fullback who should be attacking, and at times, based on your personnel, will play on the wing.
I think that's fair, but I don't see him as a guy who you definitely can't play him on the wing. But for sure, if I was like a 3-5-2 team or a 5-3-2 team, he would be one of the names I'm calling about. Like, keep an eye on this. If Toronto don't re-sign Betashore, keep an eye on them maybe dipping in for Ibarra, because he'd fit with them, I think, culturally and in terms of what they would need if Betashore leaves.
San Jose in the news here, there's rumors in Sweden that they're going to pick up Djurgården striker Magnus Eriksson, 14 goals last year in Sweden. Michael Starr, the head coach that they've recently hired, finished fourth in Sweden last year with BK Häcken. So apparently, they're saying 12 million kronor, which translates to more than $1 million or so. So it seems like he's like a right under 6 foot, hardworking striker, who hasn't
he's
scored a ton
of
goals in his previous career. Maybe you got a better scouting report here, Doyle, as you chime in.
Yeah, more of a goal-scoring winger than a striker, I think, is how I've heard him described. I've never seen him play. It's tough to figure out what San Jose are going to do with that roster, because they still got to find a place for Wando. Wando can really only play in a two-forward setup, and then you kind of have to build from there. And so they end up with all these mismatched parts. But the dude seems like a talent. I know there aren't a ton of Scandinavian guys who've had a ton of success recently, but his resume looks pretty good. So it seems like a good gamble here from San Jose.
Sticking in Scandinavia, there's rumors here that 26-year-old Syrian Swede Gabriel Somi, left-sided player at Östersund, was going to go to New England. Look, if you want to get an idea for where some of these signings this offseason are going to come and what they're going to be, go look in like the Swedish league in particular. Sort by contract expires 12/31, 2017. You're going to see a lot of players start to come in on that side. And we've already had a couple. The Galaxy signed the center back. I'm blanking on the other one right now. Oh, the right back, Anton, for New York City FC from Malmo. Yeah. So this is going to be a run on these guys as this big TAM influx comes in, because the transfer windows line up, so you don't have to pay a transfer fee. And the money is affordable and in a decent zone for MLS teams. So I've heard of a couple other teams scouting up there. You keep an eye on this stuff as the season goes on. We'll see what happens. We're going to break. On the other side, the mailbag. MLS-inspired indie band names. Let's see. Dave
Big Tam Influx.
Yep. Dave Sarakin, the disciplinary committee. It's all coming up.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email Extra Time at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hold up. I was reborn the second before the plane became shards of glass when he crashed on arrival.
Back on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental in the green room, Andrew Weeby, David Goss, and out in the octagon, Matt, the armchair analyst. Doyle, we are into the mailbag, 401-206-0MLS, and in case you were wondering, we've been pretty punchy here, and I expect this to get a little bit more. Dave does not get the MLS-inspired indie band names thing. It's just like going right over your head.
Well, I don't know about that.
You're not into it? You don't like it?
I didn't
it.
Say any of that. I just said you take the lead. You were excited about it. I wanted all you right. to enjoy yourself.
We have a suggestion here for an MLS-inspired indie band name from Dave G. in Harlem, Gulfstream FC, he says.
Nice. That's class. That well played.
That didn't actually happen.
Shout out to
Harlem. Let's see. We have Unbalanced by Design. Adam Sell got really into this. The Beckham Effect, I think that's a decent one. Five charters a year, also a pretty good one. Let's see. Buy Him Down.
I want to say Unbalanced by Design is more of an album.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
Name, right?
Urban Core is probably the same thing, more of an album. We have
the Unbalanced by Design picture would be like six wingers standing on one side of the
right.
field.
Or it would just be the MLS Best 11. Death Cab for Osted. You like that one? The Tam Tam Tams? Josie and the Waves?
That's pretty good. Yeah. I like that.
Digital Takawira?
DJ Digital
Takawira. Oh, DJ. I didn't see the DJ there. Project 40s is a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Generation Adidas is just a little bit too.
I feel like Five Charters a Year is the name of the tour.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, probably.
Urban Core is like a rap collective, like Wu-Tang.
Okay.
Well, speaking, don't we have.
You know what? I think Disappointed Committee is a good one as well. I think
yeah,
you could
sure.
just go disco and like in the new era indie band thing, like synth pop, where it's all
synth
capital
pop,
letters and like one's backwards.
Yeah.
One letter
yeah.
is just backwards.
Is this John Arnold that sent this message? For years, I've considered making an alternate account called @YoungDP, spelled Y-U-N-G, and tweet about MLS in rhyme.
I told him to get that started. I also told him to just text the Hot Take Hotline, but he just continues to hit me up. All texts from John, sponsored by Continental. Continental approved.
Nice.
So thank you so much, John. If you have more of these, always down. Always down. Really enjoy those. What else do we have here, Dave?
One more band name was Atlanta Unlocking Latent Potential, shortened to AULP, pronounced as if Gulp had a silent G.
That's too much for me.
That's too.
I can't. I'm having a hard time digesting that.
So what's next? We have show ideas, of course, coming out of the holiday break. We will still have a couple shows where there's stuff happening. But if there's stuff that interests you guys, please let us know. You can send us an email. You can tweet at us. You can send us a text. You can call us.
Yep.
Show idea here. A website. Give recommendations. Says list the two best games to rewatch on MLS Live for fans from every team.
Oh, that's one way to spend your holiday break.
Yep.
That's one way.
I'd do it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you do have a lot of downtime, so like you could just throw one up.
Well, it depends who you are.
Yeah, also if it's your team, don't you already know which those two games might be?
Maybe not.
Okay.
I don't know. TFC supporter said I'm interested in hearing about the competition going into CCL. He'd like to hear about Tigres, other Liga MX teams, and how MLS teams will compete.
Okay, we will be here for a little while on Thursday, as Dave referenced. We got all these holiday specials coming, so we have conversations with long conversations with Tim Melia, Julian Gressel that I had when we were here for MLS Cup Central, and Dave, as you said, you talked to what, like all the Kellens in MLS.
Yeah.
Jack Harrison.
While he's still in
MLS. Juan Agudelo, did you get Swagadelo?
No, I did not. I had to pass on Swagadelo so I could talk to Dwayne De Rosario.
Well, that's a decent
and
trade.
And his entire family.
Okay, that's an even better trade.
With one microphone.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly the same production that we need.
We have a nice long email here from Rene from Norway. He's a new MLS fan. He just started listening to our podcast, and of course he wants to talk about Ola Kamara. He said that Ola Kamara was on a Norwegian podcast himself.
Oh.
And the podcast.
They beat us to the punch.
Yeah, we've never had Ola on.
They beat us to the punch.
Wait, seriously? We've never had Ola on?
No.
Wow.
We'll remedy that.
Yeah.
I know you're his biggest
look
fan.
Who's running this show right now? And the podcaster joked that if Ola joins a quote unquote more central team like LA, New York, or Orlando, then they'll come to the U.S. and do it. And then this person thinks that, therefore, Ola Kamara is on the transfer block and is going to get traded.
No, that's not true.
That's a good rumor.
No.
That's a good way to start
that
rumor.
Well, they did say he could go to L.A., so they already had the Jeff Reuter rumor there. By the way, he also said he hopes his best friend, Joe Inge Berget, is in MLS, who plays for Malmo, and his contract ends in January.
Yeah.
So that's another one to watch.
As does Magnus Ikrem, who also his contract ends, and these are guys that Bob Bradley might know.
Yeah, there's a Turkish-Swedish holding midfielder for Malmo that's out of contract as well that Benfica's after. But he's like 21 and looks really, really good.
Yep.
I've been scouring Scandinavia for players who are out of contract. This is what I do in my spare time. So that's where it's been.
I wouldn't trust you as a scout.
We'll see.
You
we'll
fall
see.
In love easily on things that aren't of value.
I have
value.
An open heart.
Yeah. And last one, can we get an episode of ETR focus on the development of USL or lower leagues over the past few years? In my opinion, the success of USL, not just as a league, but also as development, maybe one of the most underrated stories of the last few years.
Yeah, it is an interesting league right now because teams are coming and going, it seems. Some of these MLS2 teams are quietly shutting down operations, but we did hear today that apparently in 2020, 2021, something like that, a team in the East Bay, Doyle, perhaps, for USL. Some expansion going on. So we'll see.
Yeah, there's this tension between, you know, trying to make money and keep it, run it like a business, but also use it as sort of R&D, which is what, you know, a lot of reserve teams around the world actually are. And it seems like Houston hit on something good with their affiliation with Rio Grande Valley. You know, we've seen it with Bethlehem Steel as well for Philly, and then the Quakes did it this year with Reno. And so it's sort of like a hybrid thing where the MLS team takes over soccer operations while there's a local ownership group that does business operations.
We'll see what happens.
I would expect that to be the path that most teams take. And I think the Sounders are doing the same thing in Tacoma as well.
Yep, they're just trying to figure it out. I mean, to expect to have teams just to kind of wade in this water and be swimming immediately is probably not the best bet. So that's it for us. Big thanks to Dave Martinez and John Thorington there at LAFC. Look, stick around. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll have some interviews for you. We'll have some banter about the CCL side. We'll see you then, everybody.